doctors thrumming in hourly with the prefabricated materials for their laboratory's exoskeleton. The carpenters and painters who were putting the finishing touches on the lab were nonplussed, to say the least. The elegant heat exchange system was carved away and replaced with heavy-duty machinery. The carefully glazed windows that looked out on the ocean now had a view of plain steel plate. The moat was filled with fast-setting plastic concrete that supported the footers for the new metal walls and roof. NASA dug a new moat, wider and deeper and open to the sea. The lab became an artificial island fortress. The 12 scientists, 7 women and 5 men, were sensitive to turf. They never approached the artifact unaccompanied by the original team. They spent hours every day comparing notes with them, planning out approaches. It was a congenial, collegial mix, everyone linked by passionate curiosity. None of the NASA scientists knew that the SNAP-30 reactor had been modified so that it could function as a bomb. Some of the mass that they thought was shielding was actually extra plutonium. Nesbitt had known, but his first allegiance was to the NSA, no such agency, not NASA. And he was no longer in the picture. The NASA team was all chiefs, no Indians, officially, but their nominal leader was Jan Dagmar, a white-haired exobiologist old enough to remember the first moon landing and young enough to go cave diving for fun. She had advanced degrees in both physical and life sciences, on top of a BA in philosophy. Her 11 compatriot scientists worked daily with the members of the original Poseidon team, and they worked together with them away from the site, too, comparing notes, planning out approaches. They all lived together in the Viala Beach cottages, where number 7 was designated the common room, a big coffee urn always going, refrigerator and pantry full of food for thought. Russell spent a lot of time in fall number 7 and had moved into number 5, leaving the fancy suite at Aggie Gray's a 10-minute bicycle ride away. Jack stayed at his, saying he could think better in air conditioning. They all agreed, although Jack was characteristically impatient, to wait until the isolated environment was finished before starting their tests. So they had 8 days of brainstorming their approaches. Equipment and supplies came in daily from Honolulu, Sydney, Tokyo. The night before the first tests, Russ called Jan and they met at the rocks overlooking the site to share a bottle of the best champagne he could find in Samoa. The relationship that was developing between them was not exactly romantic in a conventional sense, but they had discovered in each other a kind of romantic reverence toward nature and science that went back to childhood. They had both wanted to be astronauts as children. Russell had actually been accepted as a mission specialist when the Challenger disaster put everything on hold, and he switched over to the doomed Mars missions. They shared champagne and a pair of powerful binoculars, studying the crescent moon in the clear, dark sky. The night glass stabilizers hummed and clicked while he looked down the Terminator edge and named the craters Aristarchus, Messier, Globinus, Hell. "That's a deep one," he said. She laughed.
"I used to know some of the names. My dad had a telescope."
"You said they moved down to Florida to watch the moon rockets."
She nodded in the darkness.
"And all the other ones, the shuttle and all. But the Apollo rockets were the biggies. Saturn V's, deafening. You could feel the noise rattling your bones and dazzling, the one they did at night."
"That was the first one."
"No, the last. The first one was Apollo 11 in 1969.
"Oh, yeah. I slept through it," my mother said. "I was not quite 2.
"I was 12,
she said, refilling her glass.
"The first time I ever tasted champagne. Still makes me think of it."
They stared out over the project into the night, in companionable silence. The dim yellow security lights attracted bugs. Small birds swooped out of the darkness.
"This may be even bigger," she said. "It almost certainly will be."
"Even if it turns out to be homegrown," he said,
"we'll have to totally rethink physics and chemistry." "Chemistry is physics," she said automatically. "Tell you what, if this thing turns out to be terrestrial in origin, I'll buy you the most expensive bottle of